be seeing you in every lovely summer's day, in everything that's light and gay. I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you. I will find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing
I don't think we're here, but...
Standing in the sun, and you were something to see. I know what I like, and I like what I saw, and I said to myself, that's for me. A lovely morning, I remarked, and you were quick to agree. You wanted to walk, and I nodded my head as I breathlessly said, that's for me. I left you standing under stars, the day's adventures were through. There's nothing for me but the dream in my heart, and the dream in my heart, that's for you. That's for you. For me, but the dream in my heart, and the dream in my heart, that's for you. Oh, my darling, that's for you. That's for you. That's for you.
Thank you. accustomed to his face. He almost makes the day begin. I've grown accustomed to the tune. He whistles night and noon. His smiles, his frowns, his ups, his downs are second nature to me now. Like breathing out and breathing in, I was serenely independent and content before we met. Surely I could always be that way again, and yet I've grown accustomed to his looks, accustomed to his voice, accustomed to his face.
I could have told you so. I could have saved you some crying. Yes, I could have told you she's lying. But you were in love and didn't want to know. I hear. As I toss and turn and try to sleep, I hear her now. promises she'll never keep. And soon it's over and done with. She'll find someone new to have fun with. Through all of my tears, I could have told you so.
Sad and lonely, for you I sigh, for you, dear, only. Why haven't you seen it? I'm all for you, body and soul. I spend my days in longing and wondering why it's me you're wronging. I tell you, I mean it. I'm all for you, body and soul. I can't believe it, it's hard. That you turn away romance. Are you pretending it looks like the ending? Unless I could have one more chance to prove, dear, my life a wreck you're making. You know I'm yours for just the taking. I'd gladly surrender myself to your body and soul.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. This is the meeting of the Parks and Rec Commission for Goleta on Wednesday, February 22nd, 2017. We are having some technical difficulties, so we will make a couple of adjustments here as we go, but I'll let you know as we proceed. I'd like to first have us all do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. At this point, we have some new and reconfirmed members of the commission that need to take the oath of office. So, Deborah, can I ask you? I believe you're going to be sitting again. Can I ask you to take it from here?
Okay, if I can have the board
last name.
Graciela Rodriguez.
Ruth McGalpin.
Ann Lynn.
Jose Talis.
Okay, if I can ask you to raise your right hand. I solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California against all enemies, foreign or domestic, that I'll bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California, that I take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter. You do?
I do. Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And then I'll get you to sign it.
Okay, while you're returning, we'll take this opportunity, since we can't jump to presentations yet with our technical difficulties, to give each of you a chance, if you don't mind, to briefly introduce yourself and maybe a little bit of background so that the people at home can know about you a little bit more. I'd appreciate it. We can just start at the end with Graciela.
First time. Hello, my name is Graciela Rodriguez, and I'm a local from Carpinteria, actually born Santa Barbara, raised in Carpinteria. 5 years ago, I purchased a home in Goleta, and I decided to participate because I want to get more involved. A little bit about me, I went to UCSB and graduated with a double major in sociology and Spanish. I then went to Azusa Pacific University and got my credential master's in education, multiple subject, and special ed. Not too long ago, I got my preliminary administrative credential, and I'm still teaching. I've been teaching for 15 years. I'm involved in numerous community organizations, Girls Inc., Just Communities. I actually sit on the National Latina Advisory Board for Girls Incorporated. And I'm also on the Santa Barbara Brawling Betties, a local roller derby team. Yes. Since 2009.
All right. Thank you very much. Yeah. Just to add, what grade are you teaching?
I teach first grade at Adelante Charter School.
You should be able to handle us then. Okay, Ruth, please.
Hi, my name is Ruth McGalpin. I came to Santa Barbara when I was in sixth grade, Goleta. I went to El Rancho, I went to Goleta Valley Junior High, I went to Dos Pueblos, graduated in 1987, I played volleyball, basketball, and softball there. I went on to Northern Arizona University and played volleyball. I've been a collegiate volleyball coach almost all my life. I now coach at Westmont College. I'm an adjunct professor at UCSB. I teach two afternoons a week at El Camino Elementary School. And what else do I do? I'm a mother of two, have a husband, Scott McGalpin. And I love Goleta, you know, and it's a great place to live, and I'm glad to be on this commission. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you very much. Jose, I think you've done this before, right? Have you given your little while? Okay. And you too. All righty. Well, thank you. All right. Do we have our technical difficulties resolved yet?
We're making progress.
We're making progress. All right. Let's see if we can...
Let's go ahead and do the roll call.
Oh, thank you. I did skip that. All right.
Okay. Let me get mine. So, Commissioner Lynn.
Here.
Commissioner McGalpin.
Here.
Commissioner Warner. Commissioner Talis.
Here.
Vice Chair West.
Here.
Chair Hart.
Here.
Thank you.
So we can go with the presentations,
yes,
at this
sir.
Point? All righty. All right, then moving on with the agenda. We have A1, the Isla Vista Youth Projects.
Can we check to see if we have any public forum?
Oh. Sorry, you know, once you throw me off, I'm really off. So do we have any cards? We do. All righty. We have one public speaker, Bernadette Rubis, I believe is. Rubio, I'm sorry.
Hello, I'm Bernadette Rubio, and I'm a resident in Old Town Goleta, and it's been about 5 years ago I purchased a house out that way, and at the same time I noticed the coming soon Old Town Goleta Park, and nothing's happened since, so I was hoping that there'd be a little bit more community communication on an update, any kind of information just in regards to what's happening there. It seems to be... It feels, as being part of the community, as if it's a lost cause and not important. So the coming soon for 5 years is a little overdue. So I would like to see a change with that if possible. Also, on a different note, something else I would like to see is the landscaping in Old Town, specifically more of the center divides throughout the street. You know, it's just a huge disparity between, you know, going from Hollister by Costco, driving through, it just looks beautiful. Even here in this area, you drive into Old Town and the center divides are just disaster, and I don't think there's a reason for that. And you drive a little further out and it, you know, by Magnolia Center, and again it's nice. So that's pretty discouraging, and I think it's something that can be easily resolved with you know, succulents or very low cost low maintenance options. And I would hope to see that done somewhat quickly. Thank you.
Thank you. If that's all that we have for the public forum?
That is it.
Thank you. All right, now we'll move on to the Isla Vista Youth Project. Oops, go ahead, Ann.
Can we mention to her about the plan for the park? Can we just give her a little, since she asked us?
We could come back to the commission at the next meeting and provide an update since it's not on the agenda.
Would that be all right with you, yeah, next meeting?
Be happy to provide
okay.
you an update.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Isla Vista Youth Projects presentation. Joanne?
Thank you, Chair and members of the commission. Tonight I'm excited to bring to the podium today Juan Pimentel. He is the program director at Isla Vista Youth Projects, and he has a great presentation to tell you all of the wonderful things they are doing in their program and how our children here in Goleta are benefiting.
Hello, my name is Juan Pimentel. I want to just first take a moment to thank the commission for this opportunity for me to share a little bit about what IVYP does for the Goleta community. So we have four major programs: the Children's Center, the Thrive Isla Vista, the After School and Summer Program, and the Family Resource Center. I'll start with one I know more about, which is my program. I'm the program director for the After School and Summer Program. So we serve over 200 students every year. Part Goleta, part Isla Vista. So over the years, we've been kind of moving our way to Goleta. The after-school program runs basically every school day until 6 p.m. The summer program is a full-day program, which is a rare thing to find in this area, 7:30 to 5:30. So that's a 10-hour summer program for the students. We do provide healthy meals every day, breakfast, lunch, and snack during the summertime at no cost to the families, and snack and supper during the after-school program, again, at no cost to the families. Homework support and tutoring, enrichment activities for the students, art, music, sports, and we're fully integrated into the school day, so we're really an extension of the regular day, and it's a big collaboration with the Goleta Union School District. A little bit more about the after-school program curriculum. So again, it's very heavy on academics. So we do have an academic enrichment component, which is through a MindWorks curriculum program that covers six core subjects, social studies, art, language, math, science, and reading. And again, another big component is the enrichment activities. And I think this is what makes us different from the other after-school programs. We do provide opportunities for our students to participate in soccer, dance, hip-hop, a variety of different other sports, music lessons, private lessons, any other special interests kind of activities that they enjoy and that come up throughout the year. The schedules do vary. And then obviously we provide academic support. So that's through tutoring, homework time, one-on-one tutors, and anything that each particular student may need. During the summer program, it's a long day, so we continue with academic enrichment, and this is a similar curriculum, but it's a different one during the summer, and it covers the same six subjects for all the grades. We do have a fitness enrichment component and then a team building component, and fun activities in the afternoons, field trips. And then on Fridays, we just do a lot of fun things, call fun Fridays. Okay, there we go. The other program is the Children's Center. And so this program provides services to about 185 infants, toddlers, and preschool aged children every year. They also provide meals on a daily basis, and it's a nationally accredited program. Next, we have our Thrive a la Vista, which is one of our newest programs, and it's four goal areas, so our education, health, family strength, and strong community. And it's really a community-based initiative working with over 20 partners to improve outcomes for children and families. They provide targeted services to over 260 families each year. And they gather data and review data to establish best practices and provide targeted resources for students. And they also have a school readiness program, and they take the preschool kids right before they enter kindergarten. And finally, we have our Family Resource Center. They provide services to over 1,800 community members each year. And again, those are partial a la Vista and also Goleta community members. They support families with community resources, parent education, case management, and counseling referrals. They also have a monthly food distribution at Ivy Elementary School available to everyone in the community, both a la Vista and Goleta. And they help families sign up for CalFresh, Medi-Cal, CalWORKs, and health insurance. And most recently, we're expanding that program into Goleta by having one of our family advocates be on site at three Goleta schools, and that's La Patera, Elwood, and El Camino. And that just started this month, so we're very excited for that. And here's a list of all the services and resources that our agency provides to the families in the community. And it's over 20 different types of services and resources that once a family enters any of our programs, they have access to all of this. And of course, we can't do this all on our own. So we do have over 40 collaborative partners that we work with in the community to be able to provide all of those resources to our families. And here's a list of some of the main ones. And that's it. And we've been, servicing the community since 1971. So we passed our 45 years, and we're, lucky that we're still here, and we're waiting for the next 45 years to come. So thank you.
Are you willing to take some questions
and
comments?
Yes, any questions?
Okay. Go ahead.
This is such an exciting information you provided. I just have two questions, and I compliment you and all your staff for all that you do. I just, out of curiosity, for the Community Action Commission as one of your partners, is that you provide services to the Head Start families that attend?
So the connection with the CAC is they're one of our providers for food over the summer.
Oh, yes.
And they have different sites.
From their central kitchen.
Exactly.
Yes. And then what about Girl Scouts?
So Girl Scouts, the connection with that is for our after-school program. And so one of the enrichment activities is Girl Scouts. So we noticed that our particular community that we're serving was not really aware of what Girl Scouts is and what they have to offer. You know, it does involve parents to commit to taking their children to the meetings, etc. So we thought, how can we make this easy and introduce them to something like Girl Scouts, which is a great program. So we partner with them to have the Girl Scouts meet on site with us while we have them in the after school program. And it's just made it a lot easier for parents and the students, and they seem to really enjoy it.
Graciela.
I just have a couple questions and a comment. Mm-hmm. What would a family need to do to get involved or register? What is the criteria or the process, the proper protocol?
So all of our programs are open to anyone. Some of them will have a fee involved, but we really work with the families to accommodate all the different needs. So what kind of happens is most of them start in our preschool program. So that starts at 2 months. And then they just naturally transition from our preschool program to our school readiness program to our after-school program. And that takes them all the way to sixth grade. And then we connect them with the teen center after that. And throughout the whole process, when we identify that the family needs additional resources, we also connect them with our own family resource center so they can get all those resources simultaneously.
That's wonderful. You actually answered my other question, but I did want to compliment. It's exciting to hear that there's a program out there that's considering a STEM or STEAM, right? Mm-hmm. Science, technology, engineering, art, and math, as well as the hands-on inquiry-based investigations and 21st learning skills, because all of this supports the Common Core that we're doing in the classroom and also college readiness. So thank you.
Yeah, so really, it's really an extension of the regular school day.
Yes.
And so we were very conscious about that. And it's with a very direct intent to continue their learning throughout the day and throughout the school year.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Ruth.
Well, I want to thank you for this program because as a teacher at El Camino, I know how important their ACES program is mm-hmm. for their after school, as well as the fun in the sun. In their summer program. I had a few questions for you. How many, you mentioned Isla Vista and Goleta residents, out of those 200 served, how many are Goleta residents?
For the after-school program?
Yes.
I don't have the exact stats for every single individual program because there's a lot of cross between the programs, but in general, as an agency, 57 from last year, 57% were Isla Vista. And 32% were Goleta, and then the rest were Santa Barbara, which is 11%. So, but we've seen a transition from Isla Vista, which was our original demographic, you know, since the 70s, kind of spreading over to Goleta over the years. So every year the Goleta percentage is growing.
And then a few more questions. So you mentioned Girl Scouts. Mm-hmm. Are you involved with the Boy Scouts at all? Do they...
So we're currently not involved with Boy Scouts, but we would be happy if anyone knows anyone. So one of the things that I do as director is throughout the year, I'm always meeting with different partners who are interested in collaborating, because I really believe that we need to really concentrate on enriching their lives. And so we're always open to any collaborations with any other groups or organizations, because it really benefits the kids a lot.
Good. And then one more question. If I was a mentor or needed, you wanted mentors, how would a mentor sign up for your program?
So we do have volunteer opportunities for anyone in the community. Currently, most of our volunteers are UCSB students, which it's also a great thing. That's how I started. So just going to our website, filling out the volunteer application, and we have different paths for that, either directly on our website or through one of our partners, which is Partner in Education, and they handle the life scan and TB test and all of that good stuff.
Great.
And then just connect them with a student or a group or a class. Again, our programs are very diverse and serving, you know, a very wide range of students. So depending on the needs of the person or the wants of the person, you know, some prefer hanging out with the babies, some prefer teaching a class for the upper grades, and some want to help in the food distribution that we do every month. So all the volunteers have different wants of supporting the community.
Perfect. Great. Thank you.
Go ahead, Ann.
What are your primary funding sources?
So again, it's quite different across all the programs. For the preschool program, it's primarily state funded for subsidized childcare, and part private pay. So it's a mixture. For the after school program, is also state funded and private pay. It's through the ACES grant for the after school program. The Thrive program is through different foundations that have invested in the community to be able to have this program kind of gather all the resources and make the network and all the connections to create awareness for families to kind of know what resources are out there, because it could be challenging sometimes. If you need clothes, where do you go? If you need food, where do you go? So the Thrive program has created that. And the Family Resource Center, it's a mixture of different grants and foundations and private donations.
Thank you.
I just had a couple of quick ones. This is an opportunity, obviously, to present your program. I was aware of your program but didn't know the details. So I want to just give you the additional opportunity here. Is there any resources that you're pleading for out in the community, or anything that the audience at home might be able to help with?
I think, you know, we could always use support whenever we have any events or fundraising. We just finish a capital campaign for almost $2 million to purchase a building. And as we're growing, I foresee that we're going to have more capital campaigns in the future. So I think just creating awareness of here we are, this is what we do. So when we're ready to ask for, you know, financial support, then the community will know who we are and what we stand for. Any volunteers, we're always looking for volunteers. And any grants, if anyone knows of any grants, there's no shortage of needing grants. You know, that I think that's what we always do constantly, writing every grant that there is out there, because it's so competitive.
Is there a grant where, you know, Clearinghouse or any organization like that through the city or any of the other organizations? That would seem to be a community need in general. Is anybody aware of any?
Well, actually, there's not one clearinghouse of grant opportunities, but later on in the meeting we'll talk to you about a new collaboration in which topics such as grant opportunities will come to the table.
Great, thanks. One more opportunity. Mm-hmm. You did mention that you're looking for volunteers and they could go to the website. Would you mind sharing your website address?
Yes, ivyp.org.
All right.
Nice and easy.
Any other comments? Go ahead, Ruth.
I assume that you've talked to Dos Pueblos High School and you're getting all of your information to them about the need for volunteers.
Yeah, so right now we're primarily getting college students just because of the age of the students that we're serving. Our preschool during the summer does get some junior high students and some high school students. I sometimes get high school students. One of the neat things about the program is that the students are with us basically since they're born. So I do tend to get a lot of our previous students who come back when they're in ninth grade and, you know, and up and help in our programs, which is really neat to see.
Okay. Thank you, Juan. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Item A2, the Goleta Depot Landscape Plan. Joanne?
Chair Hart and Vice Chair West and the rest of the commissioners tonight, Tonight for you, we have Bruce Morden from the Goleta Depot and some of his pals that are here to present the new Goleta landscape. I'm sorry, the new Goleta Depot landscape plan.
Just bring it up a little bit. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, city staff, members of the public, I'm Bruce Morden, and I'm with the South Coast Railroad Museum. And what I'm doing tonight is just bringing you an informational presentation on a landscape plan that we have put together with a grant from the city. But we thought, since it's in a park, that you should be aware of it. First, a little bit about the depot. Let's see. Do it that way. The depot was constructed back in 1901 when the railroad first came into Goleta. Actually, not. In 1887, the railroad came into Goleta. In 1901, they changed the tracks, and that's when they built the depot. It served Goleta until 1973 when they closed it, and it sat there for about 9 years, and we didn't know what was going to happen. There was some litigation going on, but the people of Goleta really wanted to save the building, so they raised about $50,000 and moved it over to then County Park at Lake Los Carneros. So this is a picture of the depot back in 1912 when it was actually operating for Southern Pacific. It was closed and then cut in half and moved over to the park. This is a picture of the two halves going over the 101 freeway at Fairview. Once it got to the park, it didn't look real good. But through a lot of community effort, it was set down on the foundation and restored to what it looks like today. At that point in 1983, we needed somebody to take care of the depot, and that's when the South Coast Railroad Museum was put together. And things have happened over the years. We put in a miniature railroad back in 1986, and a caboose was moved onto the property in 86. It gained status as on the National Registry of Historic Places in 2002. And since then, we have regular programs like the miniature train. We have tours of the depot. And we have a program called Trails and Rails. And I'll talk a little bit about each one. But basically, the train is the thing that brings the kids over there. And they get to ride around and have a good time. We also do off-site things. We've taken some school groups on railroad trips, because the whole idea of the Railroad Museum is to learn about railroading in any country kind of setting. Like the Goleta Depot was a special place for us, but it's not like a big city depot. It's a little place. So it's all about community. So the Trails and Rails program is a National Park Service program that we've been involved in since about, well, since their program started. We've been doing it since 98. And we have exposure to about 30,000 people on the Amtrak train between here and San Luis Obispo and also up to San Jose. So we talk about that. Special events, we've got a depot day and a railroad day. Days and Easter Bunny Express and Candy Cane Train, all kinds of things that relate to the trains. And Girl Scouts, there are Girl Scouts. This is our hand car ride that we put on every once a month and for special events. Just an org chart for our organization. It's pretty slim. We've got about 11 people on our board of trustees. We have one main paid staff. We have a clerk in our shop. And we have a lot of volunteers. So back in 2015, we came to the city and got a grant, a community grant for $2,000. And we augmented that with some funds from the depot itself. And we went out and searched for a landscape designer to help us put together a plan for what the museum grounds, what we wanted in the museum grounds. And we sent the search out for about 15 different groups, and we came down to three, and we whittled it down, and we hired Van Atta and Associates. Susan's actually here tonight, so if you've got technical questions, Susan could probably answer it. But we worked with them. We had meetings at the depot. They put together a plan, and we met at their offices several times, and it worked out pretty well. And then the board adopted the plan with some policy back in last year. So the plan, not sure you can see it real well, but basically we're talking about the depot as the centerpiece, and most of the surrounding area isn't going to change a lot. But what we wanted to try and do is keep the historical and cultural significance of the depot front and center. So there were things like having a nice view corridor from Los Carneros so you can see the museum. Some of these areas here are currently blocked by trees that have been brought in by birds and all sorts of stuff. I guess they're native, but they're from the Canary Islands and things like that. We wanted to enhance the circulation, not only around the depot, but also down into the picnic area, the George Adams picnic area, and make it so that it was just accessible to everybody who visits. We wanted to look at the plantings in terms of safety and the visual impacts that they had. We did look at a lot of the trees here. These eucalyptus trees have a tendency to fall every once in a while down across our tracks and buildings, and so we've been working with Public Works on that a little bit. We especially wanted to develop an events area and some other areas in the grounds. So the events area that we're looking at is to the west of the depot itself, towards Los Carneros. Right now, this is just a wide open area, but we'd like to make it a little bit safer and better for all sorts of different events. We've been thinking about having it a source for income for the museum, so having weddings and company events and things like that. So that's that part. For something like that, you need to bring in things. There is a roadway. Let's see. If I go back, there is a roadway that comes off the parking area that goes right along the back side of our property and then down. And we have used it before to bring things in and put them right here next to the depot, but it's pretty much cross country. So we thought that would be a good thing to kind of push that a little bit more so that it would be easier access. The other little section that we've talked about is a tiered event space. Right now, this area slopes down pretty severely. And if we graded this a little bit more and put a tiered event space in here, it would be perfect for having presentations outdoors. These are just some ideas, and these are not, you can see that the front area here, that's what it looks like now. We're not talking about a lot of changes, but it would provide a place for events like tents or having mini concerts on the platform at the depot or maybe some fiesta kind of related activities. That the whole thing brings it all together. One of the other things we try to do is go back and look at the 1987 county plan. And I understand that the commission is thinking about master plans for the parks. This is one that's probably overdue, but in the original county plan, the depot was mentioned over a dozen times. And we've read through it, and we have tried to plan it that way to try and keep in the character of the original master plan. Beyond the outdoor stuff, this is a little side thing, but our museum is trying to do a community education room. The museum, the depot itself, was built in 1901, so we have to be cognizant of the Department of Interior Historic Places kind of criteria. And what we have done in the past was we took a section of the depot and turned it into a shop and a theater. But then we built another building, and so we don't use those anymore. And what we'd like to do is kind of turn it back into its original style and use it for meeting rooms, for schools, for lectures, maybe some low-cost spring and summer camps for children, a place to display the changing exhibits of the museum itself, and just a usable community space. We've got some plans to do phase one, phase two. First, just remove the walls that we have put in, and secondly, to put in some extra equipment. It'd look kind of like this. This is not our room, but it's in a similar depot. The overhead beams you don't even see right now because we put in a ceiling down below it, but it would be basically a space like this. So that's another part of what we're doing at the depot right now, besides all the other things that we do. So that's the presentation, and I'm more than willing to entertain questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions?
This looks great. My son played there when he was growing up many years ago. So just this is a little something you mentioned, a little off the subject, but do you mind sharing what your program is that takes adults up to San Luis Obispo? You mentioned it, but I'm not too aware of that. It sounded very interesting.
So we've been doing this program since 1998. At the time, we worked directly with Amtrak. Amtrak decided after about four or five of these programs came up around the country that they wanted to kind of have somebody else do it for them. So they looked around, and the National Park Service said, we'll do it. So it's a program called Trails and Rails. If you go on Google and just put Trails and Rails in, you'll find it.
Okay.
You can go to www.nps.gov, the National Park Service site, and then just put /trails and rails, you'll find it. If you go to Amtrak and do a search on the Amtrak site for Trails and Rails, you'll find it there also, because it's a partnership between the National Parks and Trails and Rail and Amtrak. So we are part of a park called the Juan Bautista de Anza National Historic Trail that has an expedition that goes from southern Arizona. Actually, they started south in Mexico, but it went all the way up to Monterey, and the families, there were about 300 people, men, women, and children, 50% of them children, and they ended up being the founding families for San Jose and San Francisco. This is back in 1776, and they went through Goleta. They've got diaries, so we know they stopped here. So we talk about that as we go, but we also ride in the car, the sightseer lounge car, and we point out everything, including a lot of sites here in Goleta as we leave from Santa Barbara. But adults, anybody who's on the train can go. Anybody in Goleta or Santa Barbara or anywhere else that wants to be part of the program, it's a volunteer program. You get training in Amtrak safety training, and then you get interpretive training, and you go on board and you basically interact with the passengers on the train.
Mm-hmm. Ruth?
Mine's just a comment. I want to thank you for coming. My kids, we love the train rides. They're a little bit too old now, but I don't know what the weight limit is.
There's no weight limit.
Oh, perfect. And the miniature trains that you have also brings in the kids and the adults. We love that, too. Still, to this day, I love going to that room and ducking under and looking at all the miniature trains. So thank you for that.
And what Ruth is talking about is our miniature train display inside the depot. And it actually depicts part of Goleta about 1940. So it's got a lot of stuff, including the lemon packing plant before it burned in 1950. So there's some really neat things to see when you visit. So,
thank you very much for
you're
the
welcome.
I'm sorry, we have one more comment.
I have a couple of technical questions about the landscape plan. The first one, is this a preliminary plan, and has it gone through review or... I don't know, I guess the city or that's just one. And then the other one is, are there any, the bathrooms, where's the bathroom access and where's the fountains drinking? Is there any drinking fountains or is there any access?
Okay, let's see if I can do this. Good questions. The answer to the first one is, this is a preliminary plan. You're seeing it. It has been presented at a city council meeting, but it was a two-minute presentation, and so they really haven't looked at it very much. We've been working with the city manager. Michelle knows about it all the way along, but it's a preliminary plan, and that's all it is. In order for us to move forward, we really have to flesh it out and do a lot more study, including a survey of the site, which is something we're actually doing with the city as part of our lease negotiations right now. Bathrooms. I don't know whether I should be talking to you about it. You should be talking to me about it, but there's a parking lot over here, and there's a project in the works for the parking lot, and there'll be bathrooms out at the parking lot. And we were talking about that with city staff the other day. They were asking us, well, do we have any bathrooms? And yes, we do. We have bathrooms inside the depot, two bathrooms, a male and a female, or whatever's open, they can go in. They're both accessible bathrooms. The way the ramps go, this is all at grade, and there's a ramp that goes down here. This is steps, but you can go down the ramp and right along the edge. Normally, it's not accessible, but we can make it so. There's a sliding door, and if you open the door, you can wheelchair right in. There's no ups or downs. It's just straight in, and it's big, accommodating restrooms within the ADA requirements. That's inside here. In terms of events, when we have major events, we end up going to Marburg and bringing in portable facilities. So that's what we do with large events.
I just wanted to comment. I think it's really great what you're doing. It really needs to be revamped. And the city's growing, and that whole area there is getting so much more use every year. It's just building and building. So I really hope that you can bring this plan to fruition and make it a better space for everybody.
The other thing, and I mentioned the plan for the lake, the other thing that we are trying, as you know, Galena only has a couple museums, and they're both here. This is one, the South Coast Railroad Museum, and then the Galena Valley Historical Society has a Stowhouse right next door to us. And we are working together. We've done a lot of things together, and we continue to do that. So we would like to work together with you to make sure that more people from Goleta and elsewhere can enjoy the park and the museums that we have here in Goleta. Yeah.
You know, I was there for the dam dinner, and I was wondering what effect that wonderfully crazy night has on your parking and people coming into your area.
It doesn't really affect us because we're not usually open when the dam dinner is on. But it does affect parking, and one of the issues with this parking that we're talking about, the new parking project, is it'll provide additional parking out there. Now, half of the parking lot that's currently there isn't owned by the city. It's owned by the fire department. And so that's an issue that I don't think they're going to take it away. So it's just going to augment that. When we have big events, when the Stowhouse has big events, we go up to the church, which is just north of us, and we ask permission, and they provide us the big open dirt lot that's next to us, and it works out quite well. And we usually get the Boy Scouts to help us out as parking attendants. So the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts have helped us along the way a lot. The reason the Girl Scouts were in the picture was because they had just done the flag ceremony for us at one of our big events. So, any other questions?
Again, thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, moving on. Item A3, the Monarch Butterfly Season Recap. Oh, there we go. Get the transition. Joanne?
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the Parks Commission. Tonight we have a number of special presentations. They're all special. but One program that we have, Inez Hernandez is in charge of. She oversees the Monarch Butterfly Docent Program. And we have a PowerPoint that she'll be presenting, and I think tag-teaming with Ms. Plummer. So I will turn it over to them. We get a lot of interest in this program at the city, not only about tours out on the bluffs, but also people who would like to volunteer and provide their time. And so we'll have a little piece of that in the presentation. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Ms. Plummer and Ms. Hernandez.
Good evening, commissioners. We are pleased to present to you a recap of this season's Monarch Butterfly Docent Program. Our program is one of four Monarch Docent Programs in California. The other three are Natural Bridges in Santa Cruz, the Monarch Grove Sanctuary in Pacific Grove, and the Pismo Beach Butterfly Grove. Our program was developed in the year 2007 to serve our community, and our goal is to develop a pool of trained volunteers to provide the public with on-site educational opportunities during the overwintering season and to assist with docent-led field trips. There's also the environmental education component to all the work that our docents do. So not only do they provide visitors with information about monarch biology and migration, but they are also there to remind our visitors to stay out of roped-off areas, to stay on designated trails, and they work a lot with crowd controlling at the grove. Across Elwood Mesa, we have six overwintering sites where the butterflies come and cluster in the trees. Our main site is the Goleta Butterfly Grove, which is also called Elwood Main, and it is typically the largest. Across all of Elwood Mesa, we had over 11,000 butterflies, and each one of these overwintering sites is considered an environmentally sensitive habitat area. The population at Elwood Mesa peaked in December with a total of 11,125 butterflies. So here's a graph showing you the breakdown of our butterfly numbers during this peak time per site. Elwood, Maine, the Butterfly Grove, peaked in December with a total of 1,730 butterflies. And so the interesting thing this year, and actually for the last couple of years, was that Elwood Grove was not the most populated site. More butterflies tended to be clustered at the Sandpiper site. Here's a graph of the population over the last 20 years in just the Goleta Butterfly Grove. So as you can see, the population at the grove fluctuates greatly over the years. Our docents, this year we had 21 docents, and of those 21, 12 were new. Docents are out in the grove Saturdays and Sundays between 11 and 3 p.m. during the season, and we typically have two docents that work each of those shifts. Our monarch season runs from mid-October through February. And docents are trained by city staff and by local butterfly educators. And this really amazing cadre of volunteers is comprised of retired educators, master gardeners. We received a lot of interest from UCSB students this year and also monarch enthusiasts throughout the community. One of the primary things that our docents do is lead field trips for school groups. These are all pre-scheduled field trips, and we usually try to book them 2 to 3 weeks out in advance. Field trip requests are submitted by teachers online via our website, and field trip sizes range anywhere from 15 to 80 students. This season, we brought over 600 students through the grove on docent-led field trips. And really exciting this season also, we received two field trip requests from a Spanish English immersion elementary school. And for one of these groups, we got the opportunity to give the 30-minute presentation that we give in Spanish and English. So it was a really, really fun thing to be a part of. Our docents lead tours not just for schools. We also lead tours for local community organizations. This season, 5 scheduled trips were canceled due to inclement weather. And there are also other organizations that lead groups through the Grove. A really special one, the not-for-profit Nature Track group, has their own group of nature docents that lead small groups of students through outdoor adventures. And this year, they brought over 200 students through the Grove. And for next season, we're looking into scheduling collaborative trainings with Nature Tracks, just to make sure that everyone's sharing the same information when we're out in the Grove. Our docents participate in a number of educational opportunities throughout the season. We have counting workshops for them. In the past, we've had butterfly gardening presentations, and we also participate in school science nights. And we try to keep our docents engaged within the scientific community. So whenever there are monarch conservation webinars, we also make sure that they're aware of that. Funding for the program comes from the Butterfly Fund, which was created as part of the Elwood Mesa Open Space land swap with the Comstock Homes. Our year-to-year expenses are not very large. We primarily need funds for updating training binders, for docent vest, and at the end of the season, we also host a docent appreciation lunch. Our program is implemented by the Neighborhood Services and Public Safety Department. The city's advanced planning manager continues to give us advice and guidance throughout the season as well. And we also receive great help from our public information officer, who responds to media requests. And she also keeps our website updated with counts on a monthly basis. We did want to point out some highlights of this season. We were invited to speak at the Daughters of the American Revolution district meeting in Montecito early October. So that was really exciting. We got to talk about our program and about our monarch butterflies. We were also featured in several articles this year, which is really exciting. And I think this is typical of our season. We get tremendous interest from local news groups. Plans for next year, we hope to continue to build our relationships with other Monarch programs, to continue to recruit enthusiastic docents to be able to enhance the visitor experience. And we're also looking into updating display material. This season, we've been looking into replacing old and broken trail markers and signs. And then another one of our goals is to continue to outreach for Spanish language tours. As always, we are always interested in having, we're always in need of enthusiastic, monarch-loving individuals to come join our docent team. So if anyone out there is interested, feel free to reach out to us. You don't need any butterfly knowledge. We'll train you. And you can always visit our website for more information at www.galitabutterflygrove.com. And we also wanted to give, for more information, you can also contact myself or Ms. Joanne Plummer. And we also wanted to give a special thanks to our 2016-2017 docents. We had an amazing group this season. And I just felt very honored to have been able to work with them throughout these past 4 months. And as you can see, the list is pretty long this year. But that concludes my presentation, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair and members of the commission, we just wanted to, as staff, and just really in appreciation for the tremendous work effort that Ms. Hernandez has put into this special program here at the city that is really, it's amazing to see, you know, the tours of the school kids, the Spanish tour that was conducted. It's really amazing, and it takes real people to do this work effort, and it's that much more special when they're volunteers and they really just do it out of a passion to serve.
And I just wanted to publicly thank Ms. Hernandez for her tremendous work effort. And she really did an incredible job this year of the recruitment effort for docents. So the city of Goleta wants you. You can have your name up on this PowerPoint tonight. But it's really a labor of love, I think, from a lot of the volunteers who participate. And we just wanted to thank all of them publicly for their tremendous work. Thank you.
Thank you. If I may, just one quick question. What is the health of the Butterfly Fund? I mean, you mentioned the Butterfly Fund is the primary source of funding. Are you using that up? I don't know how big a endowment it was initially. Are you just using income off it, or how is the health of the fund?
So as I had mentioned earlier, our yearly expenses are actually not very minimal. So we don't really tap into that fund as much, but I think we're looking at about $185,000 in our current fund.
Great, right. Well, obviously it's important. It's the butterfly is on our city seal, so we appreciate the efforts on your behalf. Go ahead.
I was just wondering if you would talk to us a little bit about the plight of the monarch butterflies here, because I think we can all remember when we had tens of thousands, and then we had the severe drought, and then the eucalyptus trees were dying and falling over and rotting. And so I'm hoping, what do you think with all this current rain? Do we anticipate many more monarch butterflies the next winter season for them?
I did want to just mention really quickly that as you can see from the graph that I had shown of our butterfly population, the last 20 years, the local population of monarch butterflies fluctuates greatly. So at any given year, we can have a record high or a record low, and a lot goes into that. So it's hard to tell what's in store for next season. All we can do is hope for more butterflies. But Joanna, I think Joanna had something to say as well.
Yes, thank you, Inez. Commission members, I just wanted to share with you that, as Inez pointed out, and she did a fabulous job on her presentation, we do have peaks and valleys here in Goleta when it comes to our butterfly population. And rest assured, we are trudging forward, business as usual when it comes to the butterflies, already starting the recruitment for next year. And on our docents, and still continuing to working on replacement of those signs and everything that Inez had mentioned. So we are anticipating the butterflies will be back, that we're hoping that we'll see a little upswing in there. And there was a recent report that was given at a council meeting a few weeks back that if you have not seen it, I would recommend that you watch that presentation. It was a very well done analogy of the health of the grove in general and all the areas out on the mesa. So not just in the butterfly grove, but all out there as a result of the drought. So lots of extensive works being done. But as we move down the road in that direction to look at what we can do about the trees, we're also moving forward to what we can do about the recreational opportunities for the butterfly program.
Graciela?
I wanted to tell Inez that I was one of those dual immersion schools, classrooms that went to visit you, and you made the experience so pleasant. I want to thank you for responding quickly to emails, and my students loved all the information that they shared, and you accommodated to two classrooms, and we were able to make it work where we could tour the area, and then they had their little workshop as well. So I wanted to say thank you personally again. And also, I wanted to ask, I know it was mentioned before, and I don't really recall if it was on a meeting, or I think maybe Lynn mentioned this to me, but something about butterfly extinction in the next 50 years. Have you heard any of that current research? Are you familiar with that in regards to the monarch butterfly?
I think that the presentation that Ms. Plummer just pointed to,
okay,
is a really good resource, okay, to answer some of your questions regarding the butterflies and their status. But I'm not a biologist, so I don't really know too much about what's happening per se in the next 50 years.
I will definitely catch up, and I just wanted to say that we need to talk because I would love to volunteer on the weekend or whenever I can. I do have one more question. You mentioned you go out, schools come out to you, but for your educational programming, do you also go into the classrooms?
As you see that big smile on Inez's face, that's something that Inez and I have been speaking about. We're trying to identify a funding source that would allow us to fund that opportunity because the primary bulk of her workload is done in a certain number of months, but the off season of the butterflies, she would be a fabulous educator, and we want to make sure that we can, number one, secure the funding to be able to do that, and number two, find the right match to sustain that kind of program.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay, thank you very much. Great job. Okay, moving on to item A.4, the playground project update. Back to you, Joanne.
Thank you, Chair Hart and members of the commission. Tonight, I am here to present to you just a little bit of update about what's happening since our last meeting in December, where you received a big presentation. Because we have a lot of new commissioners as well, I wanted to share just a little bit of recap of that presentation. In addition to some of the new developments that we've uncovered, and then we have a pilot project that I'm sure you're waiting to hear about too. So our topics of discussion tonight will be the presentation from December 14th, as well recently identified playground needs, some discussion about playground safety surfacing, and some things that we've uncovered as well, in addition to an update on our pilot pickleball program. Hmm. So the playgrounds that were presented by M6, our consultant, excuse me, they were mostly related to a certain number of parks. We talked about the safety surfacing that needed to be either repaired, replaced for health and safety reasons, ADA accessibility. Some of the playgrounds were out of date and needed to be replaced or even potentially moved to different locations. So as we go through the parks, one of the parks was Andamar Park. I'm not going to go through all the concerns and recommendations. These were in your last presentation. But again, a lot of them are the original location of the parks that we inherited. And so we're looking at how we can make those more visible to the street as people are driving by for the safety of all the users, as well improving access, whether it's from the pathways to access the parks or even to access the playground equipment if you have a disability. And then also potentially expanding the types of structures. If you've been out to the parks, you'll see a lot of them maybe just have a swing set or maybe just a climbing apparatus. So potentially expanding it for either multi-age users or multiple uses at once. So San Miguel Park, again, some of the same issues. This one, it has a lot of tree overgrowth. We're working on some of these things. One of the retaining wall that's failing, there's consideration and discussion as to whether or not we repair the retaining wall or actually lower the playground down to level with the rest of the park. So to see what on the long-term maintenance would be the best. Santa Barbara Shores Park, again, a little bit of discussion of relocation. Winchester 1 and 2, there's some conflict of uses with a backstop tucked in the corner. Maybe it's not used as often. Maybe we want to eliminate the backstop. If you talk with our little leagues and our girls softball, they want every backstop they can find. So we're still discussing all those options, and we'll be bringing lots of recommendations to you in the coming months. So since our presentation on December 14th, we have identified a couple different playground areas that we wanted to bring to your attention, and these were not identified in the recreation needs assessment for some different reasons. The first one is at the Boys and Girls Club. So as you may recall, I started here on November 28th, and part of my duties was to go out in the community and explore different parts of Goleta, as well as meet lots of wonderful people, and I have, and I appreciate that. But one of the things we talked about when I met with different groups was, if you had one wish, what would that wish be? And not making any promises, but what would that wish be? And the program director at the Boys and Girls Club, Ashlyn, who does a fabulous job out there, said she would like some help with her playground. So when I went back to the playground, there was some significant concerns. The big concern is it's a wooden structure that was initially installed back in the mid-1990s. It was a community project that was completed. It's a fabulous playground for the 1990s, but in 2017, it's just not holding up very well. There's two areas. The middle picture has two different areas on that platform on the bottom where you can see wood dry rot and some damages. The base on the right-hand side is a close-up look at just one of those legs. So the Boys and Girls Club is very aware of the situation. What we have done as a city is we've asked them to keep their gates locked so that no citizens can actually access the playground if they're not out there with their students. And so they have been complying with that, and they are currently looking for some other options. Berkeley Park, you may also know it as Emerald Terrace Park. It goes by a couple different names. There's a great swing set back there. This location backs up to Kellogg Elementary School, and there's a swing set and then a tot lot space. The tot lot space looks great, but the swing set has six different legs, and on two of the legs, the middle picture shows where the rust is actually eaten through the pole. So we have a temporary fix on that right now, but it's not a long-term fix. It's just a temporary fix. So this is another area that we need to address. The right-hand side that you see that picture on the right, that's a sleeve that was put on another leg at a time before we acquired the park. So this is an area that we have to address as well. Again, neither of these locations were included in the recreation needs assessment, so they're not on our radar, nor are they on the allocation of funding. So, but these are two, and I promise I'm not going around trying to cause problems, so I just wanted to set the record straight on that one. The other thing we wanted to talk about tonight was a little bit about the playground safety surfacing options. So there's a few different options that we consider when we're looking at playground safety surfaces. One is interlocking rubber playground tiles, and there is a laundry list of vendors that supply all of these different materials. So the interlocking rubber playground tiles are great. You talk to that vendor, they'll tell you how wonderful their product is and why it's better than something else, just like all of these will. The pour in place, you have some great opportunities for some decorative designs. You can actually incorporate games in there like a hopscotch or Foursquare or anything like that. The manufactured wood fibers is really popular. That's replacing sand these days. And then you have artificial turf that they're actually using not just for playing fields, but also now for some playgrounds with some fall resistance. So the playground safety surfacing concerns is that sand is really no longer considered acceptable as a safety surface for 5 to 12 year old structures because the potential fall height for a child could cause some damages with the sand compaction rate. For the tot lots, it's okay. One of the reasons that we want to get away from sand is because a lot of our parks are in neighborhoods, and as animals like to troll around the neighborhood in the evening hours, we don't know what the children are going to uncover the next day when they're in there. It makes me really sad because one of my favorite things that I've done since I've been here in Goleta is I went out to a playground and I saw a three-year-old squishing her toes in the sand. She sat there and took her shoes and socks right off in front of her mom. It was the best. But that is a concern. We just don't know. No matter how much maintenance we do, we can't control the animals making their way to take care of business in the sand. The rubber products may have some products in there that could have potential health risks. There's a study that's happening. You see it on the bottom there. It's in your packets, and I can email you the link if you need me to. It is through the Consumer Product Safety Commission. They're evaluating the health risks associated to loose fill rubber, rubber tiles, pour in place, bonded rubber, and synthetic turf. And we're expecting those results to come out in the summer of 2017. So we are still moving forward with playground concepts. And now that we know kind of what our concerns are, what we're looking at, we're holding off on what type of product that we're going to put under the playgrounds to, and we'll be bringing that back to you after we have the results of this study. The manufactured wood fiber, it's not a rubber product, but it does require ongoing maintenance and replacement of the product. So our next steps and some of our options. For the Boys and Girls Club, the city is working closely with this organization to identify possible funding sources for replacement. To date, we have offered them three or four different opportunities to explore, and we have confirmation that they've explored one and have submitted one grant application, and we're not sure on the others yet. But we are trying to identify some of those different funding opportunities for them and are working very closely with them. Berkeley Park, this is an additional budgetary request and is currently underway. So we've already put forth the need to replace that playground or at least get that swing set out and until we can figure out what we're going to do next. For all city park replacements, we need to secure the funding for consideration. What we'd like to do is to do all of them as one project but phase them out. So a little overwhelming to do five park renovations at once. So if we have all the funding identified and start looking as one contract but phase them in, that would be our goal. And as soon as we have the funding secured and we know which direction we're going in, we'll be doing the neighborhood outreach that we discussed back in December and trying to figure out what type of playground we'll be looking at and going from there. The playground surfacing decision, since that report will be released in the summer of 2017, it's recommended at this point that we consider the data from that report for our decision-making processes for our community. So we're holding tight until we see those results. Our pickleball pilot project update. So we were going full steam ahead on the pickleball pilot project. Say that 10 times fast. So our temporary court materials have been ordered. They've been received. Our monitoring system has been established to collect the following data. We're going to be collecting the time and day and the type amount of use that people are out there, the number of users that they bring out there, their residency location. And the way we're doing this is we have a group of enthusiastic volunteers, and they have created a Gmail account, galitapickleball@gmail.com. And they are going to ask those questions and put out there. And we're going to, once we're ready to launch, we are going to encourage people to use that Gmail account and just shoot a quick email letting us know kind of those things. Where do you live? How many users? What time of day were you out there? And then we have another group of seniors that go out there that are choosing not to use the Gmail email, and they are actually writing everything down for us, and they will be handing that in to me on a weekly basis. And that was their choice. So it's great for the users of technology and those that still like old school. We're capturing them both. Our volunteers are in place for that, and they're also going to report any concerns or issues so we can stay on top of this. But we're on hold. And this is why. So this is our brand new beautiful courts at Evergreen Park. All the cracks, all the joints have cracks in the seams. That is a little bit understandable because the earth moves, and if there's a seam, that makes sense that we would see a little bit of a crack. But as you see on the far right-hand side, it's already crumbling in some of those seam cracks, and that's not acceptable to us. In addition, the screw that holds the net in place in the middle, the center of the court, that there's so much crumbling occurring around the hole of the screw, it doesn't even stay in any longer. So right now we are working with the vendor that installed the tennis court surfacing, and we're negotiating with them on what we can do to fix this. The last thing we want to do is put down tape on the court for a temporary pickleball court and do anything to void the warranty. So we are on hold until we can rectify this situation. I just wanted to make sure that you didn't think that we had not listened to your request to get a pickleball project going. We were ready to roll, and I went out to meet with some of the pickleball players, and that's when I saw this, and we kind of put it on hold. So that's all I have for you right now, unless you have any questions that you'd like to ask of me, and maybe I know we have some
further
citizens.
Input.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, thank you very much, Joanne. Just a moment. I was remiss in the public forum section not acknowledging a couple of very detailed letters that we received from the public. So at this point, I'd like to acknowledge it. I'm not going to read them, but I might at least, I guess, summarize their concerns. The first one, since we're on the pickleball issue, I will address was from, I'm forgive the pronunciation, but Heike Heisen wrote us about her concern, I believe, about the pickleball courts. Her position was that these are great new courts. She's a tennis player, and she didn't think that it was a good use of those courts, these really nice new courts, to be converted into a pickleball trial setup. The, I guess, interesting thing about the notes was she did acknowledge that there is a great interest that she was aware of from pickleball players, and she understands that. So it is just a competing interest overall in this. But anyway, she had a very thoughtful letter, and I appreciate that input. So perhaps we can get that included in the minutes, or somehow we'll get that shared with the public. The other input was from Ingborg Cox, MD and MPH, follows his name. The subject of this was going back to the December presentation on M6 Consulting and the proposal for a possibility of using pour-in-place surfaces at the playgrounds. He points out, looking at the material safety data sheets and other information, that there is potentially health risks. And as Joanne pointed out just now in her presentation, we are aware of those concerns, and we certainly will integrate those concerns into our review of the options as we go forward.
And Mr. Chair, just for clarification, Dr. Cox is a female.
Sorry.
Chair Hart, if I could let the commissioners know and the viewing public know that whenever letters are received of the commissioner council, those letters will be attached where our staff reports are on the website.
Great. That's appreciated. Again, I appreciate those two letters. Very thoughtful, very thorough, and I encourage anybody else that wants to give input to please do so. All right. Were you finished with the presentation?
I am, unless you have any questions.
Other questions, comments? Please, Ruth.
A few things. You know, my family grew up in the Winchester One, Save the Backstop. I read the whole detailed book of all the parks and playgrounds, and I understand the concerns with having the backstop and balls flying into the street, hitting cars. So I do get that. But the people that use it are the young people. It's not the adults necessarily. I do agree, though, with the idea of a sight line in all your reports. It's very important, but you can't access Winchester One from the cul-de-sac, not just Kyriel. In terms of pickleball, I am a pickleball player. I also play tennis. So I understand there's competing people out there. I would hope that the city of Goleta would actually go to the city of Santa Barbara and look at their pickleball courts located near Montecito Country Club. They're very well done. Evergreen Open Space has two tennis courts, but Kellogg has four. Has anybody looked into, instead of putting the pickleball courts at Evergreen, instead putting them on one of the four tennis courts at Kellogg? It is closer to senior citizens, and I do believe that still is in the city of Goleta. It would be an easier way to incorporate it, and I could be wrong on that. So that I might be out of my boundary there. So I don't know. Thank you.
Thank you. If I'm not mistaken, I do believe that's not in our jurisdiction, the Kellogg courts, but correct?
I believe it is not in the city limits, but we'll double check that for sure for you.
Yeah, back to the pickleball thing, I will acknowledge a bias. I'm a tennis player. I've played pickleball, but I play tennis 5 times a week, and I don't play pickleball regularly. One of the reasons we chose the courts that we did, and actually she articulated in the letter, these are new. She's currently trying to get some people organized to use it on a regular basis, but that's why we chose it as a preliminary testing site, to gauge the interest, and because there wasn't an established pattern of use because they'd been out of commission for so long. But that was why we chose it the way we did. But obviously there are competing interests, and we're trying to be sensitive, but we've got to at least give a shot to, I believe, some of the other interests in the community. Other comments? Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Joanne. Okay, moving on. Item B, the consent calendar. We have the need to approve the Parks and Rec Commission meeting minutes of December 14th. Would somebody like to make a move?
And Commissioner Hart, before you make a motion on that, so that I let the commissioners know, we'll have Commissioners McGulpin and Rodriguez abstain from the vote on these minutes since they weren't at the last meeting.
Thank you. We can do that. May I have a motion?
I move that we accept the minutes of December 14th, 2016.
Can I have a second?
I'll second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, we got them all. Those that were present. Okay. Commission organization, item C, the selection of chair and vice chair.
And if I could briefly just give an overview, since we have a couple of new commissioners
here. Thank
you. So annually, the commission reorganizes. You can nominate, what you'll do, the process is you nominate a person to become the chair. I'll ask for the vote. And then after we're done with that, then we'll go on to the vice chair. And then at the next meeting, we'll go ahead and reorganize.
Okay, thank you. So at this time, I will open up the floor for nominations.
I'll nominate you again.
Thank you. Other nominations?
I nominate Daryl West.
Any further nominations? Okay, so I will take this little opportunity. Thank you for the nomination. But a little history. Again, there aren't any requirements in the bylaws that would prohibit me from serving another term, but we have established a bit of a tradition here to get it rotating through the group. It's a great opportunity. I've appreciated my terms as both vice chair and chair, but it's an opportunity to participate with Vito and Joanne in the pre-agenda meetings prior to the regular meetings. It's a good window into the workings of the commission and the behind-the-scenes work that needs to be done. So I do think that it is a good idea to continue the rotation. As long as we have willing participants, I think I'm going to decline that nomination at this point and throw my weight behind Commissioner West's nomination as chair. So with that, can we turn it back over to you?
If we can have a vote on that, please.
Do I just say all in favor? Or
all in favor.
Okay, all in favor, please.
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Okay. Now we may move to the nominations for the vice chair. At this point, I would like to nominate Commissioner Lynn as vice chair. Other nominations? Okay.
If we can call for the vote, then.
All in favor of Commissioner Lynn as vice chair? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, I think that we are through that process. All right, congratulations to the new chair and vice chair.
And thank you for your service, Greg. You've done a great job.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
For your help this last year was important, and the Vice Chair also.
Appreciate it. Okay, moving on to item D, Director's Report.
Mr. Chair and members of the Commission, just a few items tonight on the Director's Report, and these items occurred after the meeting that we had with you at the end of December, at the mid-December. And this being our first meeting of the year in February, we had a few items for you. By the way, our next meeting will be on April 26th. So we meet every other month, just to make a note on your calendar. The first item that we wanted to share with you is
We received approval from the City Council and submitted a grant submittal to the State Department of Housing and Community Development for a housing and recreation related program, grant program that provides funding to the city to help establish new parks. The park project that was identified was the at the Goleta Valley Community Center in the area immediately east of the Boys and Girls Club and north, that vacant lot field, if you will. That was identified as the preferred project to create just a small community park there. The application went in today. It's expected that we'll hear back from the state in June. So we look forward to hearing back from the state on that. I might add, Ms. Plummer did an excellent job on this. She started at the end of November, and the grant program came out at, I think, the end of November. So already she has helped really immensely the effort to bring parks to the community. And this was a shovel-ready site, if you will. It was definitely identified as a site that would be used. I think everybody who knows the community center knows of the lot we're talking about. And so now this could be a dream come true, where we'll actually turn that into a usable park site. It's anticipated once we hope we receive funding, we'll know in June and we'll report back to the commission. But we anticipate, obviously, doing some design work and bringing some of those conceptual plans to you for your input, and so you can be a
much.